Good day, and welcome to the Magnet 2Q and 1H 2021 Trading Update and Financial Highlights Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Albert Avedikoff. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Kristen. Good evening, good afternoon, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us to discuss Magnet's operating and unaudited financial results for the second quarter of 2021. With me to review the results are our CEO, Jan Danning, and CFO, Dmitry Ivanov. The announcement and respective presentation are available on our website, and after our remarks, we look forward to taking your questions. I would also like to remind you that today's financial results are based on the management accounts and IFRS audited financials will be published later in mid-August. With that, I will now turn the call over to Magnet CEO, Jan Danning. Jan, please.
Yeah. Thanks, Albert, and good day, everyone, and thanks for joining us. I'm delighted to see a healthy development of the underlying operating and financial metrics. We're again delivering on our promises. Sales densities continued improving, supported by mature stores. We've seen margin is under control. We are generating cash, and that remains strong. Working capital saw another round of optimization, and leverage stayed even below our comfortable zone. We've completed strategically important acquisition of the Dixi business with around 2,500 stores, and this deal dramatically changes our market positioning in both capitals and is value accretive post synergies for our shareholders. Now let me take you through the key highlights for the second quarter before we move into the details. The sales growth accelerated to almost 10% despite the high base effect of last year. LTM sales density increased by 4.6% year-on-year. Like-for-like sales growth came higher versus previous quarter at 5.2%. This was driven by mature stores, but not new stores in the ramp-up phase. Both sales growth and like-for-like sales growth were accelerating month-to-month. Customer behavior started to normalize with like-for-like composition returning to a healthy balance with continuous trading up effect. In line with previous communication, we accelerated expansion and redesign program. Expect further pickup in the second half. EBITDA margin improved versus previous quarter, and we expect sustainable trend to continue with annual margin improving compared to last year. Our working capital cycle improved again with an inventory turnover 11 days better year-on-year, primarily on more efficient stock management. Our financial position remains strong with a leverage of 1.2. Full year and long-term guidance remain unchanged. And finally, we have been placed third in the ESG ranking of Russian non-financial public companies produced by the national rating agencies. With that, I will now add some more color to the quarter's development. So we achieved a solid like-for-like sales growth in the mature stores and speed up expansion. The total sales growth stood at 9.6%. Like-for-like sales growth was 5.2%, pushed by mature stores despite growing number of new stores. Expansion accelerated, underpinned by strong return dynamics. We opened 519 stores on gross basis, three times more than a year ago. And for the first half, we added 926 new stores in line with our guidance of 2,000 store openings this year. Like-for-like sales growth was positive across all regions and all formats. The key convenience format demonstrated leading like-for-like sales growth of 5.7%. It was closely followed by drogery with 5.5%, and the supermarkets turned positive with 2% like-for-like sales growth. Now, other company-specific trends included fast growth of the number of new unique customers as the main driver of our like-for-like growth. Visit frequency increased as well on the back of low base effect last year. We continue to attract customers from larger formats, some small players, and unorganized retail. Number of active loyalty card holders exceeded the 50 million with 65% penetration of sales. Negative like-for-like ticket growth in April-May was due to stockpiling effect last year. Decline of the average number of articles in the baskets was the only negative driver in the quarter. On-shelf price inflation decelerated versus its peak levels in January-February and landed in a comfortable zone in line with the food CPI. Trading up effect continued as a result of ongoing assortment changes. Again, we don't see customers sacrificing quality of their purchases. Important that each month we were looking at further normalization of customer behavior. Like-for-like composition was gradually moving to a healthy balance. Since June, we're seeing both like-for-like tickets and traffic growth being positive with trading up in place. The promo intensity remained flat quarter on quarter. Year on year, it has visibly increased. The low base last year due to countrywide lockdown was the main contributor to this growth. Seasonal campaigns were strong, supported by favorable weather conditions and active domestic tourism. Overall promo level remains at a healthy level, and we continue to focus on CVP improvement to drive sales in the first place. At the same time, we see improving promo margin due to better promo forecasting. We continue to develop our e-com initiatives. We run several e-com pilots, including own express and regular delivery and partnerships. In the second quarter, we launched own delivery services from Magnet Cosmetics stores and superstores in the regions. And we've also started partnering with Wildberries in express delivery. We added 12 new cities and connected another 700 stores to our service. Today, over 2,000 stores in 62 regions and 106 cities are covered by online optional. And we may finish this year with a total of over 4,000 stores connected. Looking at data insight statistics, we see that this is the highest geographical coverage among public retailers. The run rate for Magnet's online segment stands at 7.6 billion rubles based on the last week of June. 61% of the current revenues are generated outside Moscow and St. Pete. We fulfilled around 15,000 orders a day. Quarter-on-quarter growth accelerated to 58%. Till the end of 2021, we plan to expand online delivery, adding new stores and cities. Now a bit on recent trading. July was also affected by high base effect. Last year, July was the third best month in terms of like-for-like sales growth after March and October. This was supported by limited domestic and international tourism and state subsidies. Despite that effect, we are happy to see further acceleration versus second quarter average. July month-to-date sales growth went up to a double-digit zone. This was supported, first of all, by further pickup in like-for-like sales in the mature stores and a bit higher selling space growth, so we may finish July with higher like-for-like sales growth versus the second quarter average, despite even tougher comp. Like-for-like composition remained healthy and with a positive ticket and traffic growth. Trading up continued in our stores. Looking into the next month, we expect good momentum with strong trading. It may be supported by one-off back-to-school payment. According to Sberbank survey, 50% of recipients intend to spend their additional social payments on food. Now let me pass the floor to Dima to walk you through our financial results.
Thank you, Jan, and hi, everyone. Let me start with gross profit. So gross profit margin remained flat quarter on quarter at 23.4%, but was 91 basic points lower versus last year. We had positive impact from the following factors. First of all, improved commercial terms with suppliers. We also improved promo funding from suppliers, and we had a higher promo margin. Shrinkage improved by 26 basic points, despite acceleration of store openings and thanks to street oversight and solid like-for-like sales growth. We had favorable format mix on higher share of drogery business. These positive factors were offset by 2.9 percentage points higher promo share year-on-year due to low base in the same period last year, and efficient seasonal campaigns this year, and this resulted in around 60 basis point effect according to our estimations. Relatively less favorable product mix versus last year with forward buying of dry and non-food, and this had a negative impact of around 10 basis points. Slightly higher supply chain costs due to continuously improving on-shelf availability and increased transportation rates, and recovery of HoReCa consumption leading to higher share of wholesale operations. SG&A expenses remained under strict control. SG&A's percent of sales were 10 basis points down versus previous quarter and flat versus last year. That came despite some cost inflation and growing number of stores in the ramp-up phase. Staff costs went down 7 basis points. High productivity of in-store personnel, especially in convenience and drugstore, fully offset additional pressure from new stores in the ramp-up phase and some turbulence in rotation due to pandemic last year. Lease expenses improved by 15 basis points on increased sales density, better rates per square meter, and closing of inefficient stores. That more than offset growing share of lease space and already mentioned ramp-up effect. Advertising expenses increased by 26 basis points on higher marketing activities, including loyalty campaigns as well as digital marketing. Depreciation of assets improved by 10 basis points, driven by growing sales density and the fact that more store openings are leased. That compensated some speed up and expansion. Other costs remained broadly flat. As a result, EBITDA margin improved quarter on quarter to 7.1%, but was down year on year. Adjusted for LTI expenses, EBITDA margin would be 8 basis points higher, or 7.2%. Net interest expenses reduced by 25 basis points year on year, and this came despite a recent increase in total amount of borrowings at somewhat high rates, which was netted by interest income. A fixed gain of 600 million rubles was related to direct import operations. As a result, net income in the second quarter decreased by 6% versus last year and stood at 12.1 billion rubles with a margin of 2.8%. Net income for the first half year grew by 34.6% with a margin improvement of 56 basis points to 2.8%. Effective tax rate was 22.5%. We are on track with working capital cycle optimization. Inventories reduced by 19.5 billion rubles year on year, resulting in the faster rotation by 11.2 days, despite acceleration of store openings, increased share of drugstore formats, higher on-shelf availability, and suppliers' inflation. Trade and other payables grew by 27.5 billion rubles versus last year, driven by higher sales and increased payment days. Accounts receivables increased by 2.4 billion rubles versus last year due to higher sales and improved commercial terms with suppliers. We continue to focus on further improvements in the working capital in days. As for CAPEX, CAPEX increased on acceleration of expansion. CAPEX in second quarter tripled to 17.2 billion rubles due to much faster expansion. Three times more stores were opened versus last year. We also continue with our redesign campaign, and this quarter we covered another 143 stores. We reiterate our guidance for the year to open around 2,000 stores on gross basis, redesign about 700 stores, and spend 60-65 billion rubles on CAPEX. With this, you may expect us to accelerate expansion in the next quarters. Redesign program will be even more backloaded. Our financial position is stable on comfortable leverage, extended duration, and low cost of debt. At the end of second quarter, our gross debt was 265 billion rubles. This came at 58% higher versus end of last quarter. Faster expansion and financing of DIX acquisition were the main reasons of this increase. Cash position increased accordingly to 129.4 billion rubles, resulting in net debt reduction of 15.8% versus end of the previous quarter. Average cost of debt increased to 6.4%, which is just 12 basis points higher than a year ago. Despite different monetary policy with rising market rates, our recent borrowings came below the state bonds yield, and cost of our debt portfolio is below the key rate. Net debt to EBITDA ratio was 1.2 times versus 1.4 times 3 months ago. And now I will give the floor back to Jan for some closing remarks.
Yeah, thanks, Dima. Just a few notes before we move to the question and answers. The results are, for us, another clear signal of our turnaround. We're delivering on our promises, and in some areas, we're actually moving faster than originally planned. Mature stores continue driving sales densities. Organic expansion accelerates. We keep our margin under control without quarterly dips and hikes. It steadily improves. This trajectory will remain going forward. Efficient inventory management leads to working capital optimization even ahead of our plan. And despite some headwinds, we keep our long-term guidance unchanged. With the acquisition we recently completed, our market positioning significantly strengthens, and even more, this dramatically changes our investment case. We're becoming a business with fast double-digit top-line growth, continuous margin gains, strong balance sheet, cash generation, and a sustainable dividend distribution. Thanks for listening, and we're ready for your questions.
Christina, you are ready for the Q&A session. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll go to our first question from Nikolai Kovlev.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello. Yeah, it's Nikolai.
We hear you, Nikolai. Yeah.
I wanted to ask a couple of questions. First, on your release, basically we saw ongoing optimization in shrinkages and inventories, and I was wondering, can you describe maybe more details about operations and what you did in order to sustain this kind of improvements, and maybe you can also give us guidance by how much these two lines can be further optimized, and if you can clarify what kind of level of shrinkage you operated in the last quarter, will be helpful, if any. And the second question I wanted to ask is on Dixie acquisition. It's basically clear you're going to keep label Dixie and stores for now, but I was wondering, are you scheduling any immediate investments in order to improve the internal level of service at the stores? To that of Magnet, I mean, internal outfit, maybe lighting, maybe lines, cashiers. Like, looks like Dixie service is lower than that of Magnet, and I was wondering, are there any CapEx schedule here? Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me start with the first one, the shrinkage question. Yeah, I think shrinkage is always a result of the processes that you put in place, and that's of course heavily connected to the transformation that we're actually trying to put in place here. So what you've seen is, of course, last year a big improvement in shrinkage, which was due to a bad, pretty low base. This year, you see a continuous improvement, and that's mainly because of supply chain improvements, but also because of the whole process of ordering order quantities, the box sizes, an adjustment of store orders. So there's quite a lot of people involved, but we made it an important tracker for where we are in our overall improvement of the concept. So I'm happy that is still developing. Now, of course, and I think that's also what you were mentioning, we should also be realistic. The improvements that we've seen last year and part of this year, of course, we will not be seeing next year or going forward, but we still believe that there is a space to improve. So we're currently cruising around 3%, and we believe that we still have an opportunity to go lower. But what we still, what's really also the signal that we give to the organization is, if you start squeezing that too much, you immediately affect the top line. And that balance we need to find. And therefore, we're more oriented on process optimization than just clean shrinkage reduction. Then the second one is the Dixie acquisition. Now, we're currently in the process of understanding the business in the sense of what is their CAPEX plan, how do they cooperate between the commercial, operational, and marketing departments. And we see already that indeed the level of money spent on maintenance and especially also store operational execution is not in line with what we do in Magniet. So you will see that we will take there some influence, that we want to see that change. But it will take some time. And by the way, what's also important to realize is that we want the management team of Dixie to stay in place, but we'll with the help of KPIs and discussions, get them spend more on their store operational, because we believe that therefore there's also still some space or some upside in the sales development that they show that will improve the moment we have better circumstances in the store.
Mm-hmm. It's clear. Thank you very much.
And we'll take our next question from Max Nekrasov with Goldman Sachs.
Hi, yes, hello. Thanks a lot for this call. I have a couple of questions. The first one is also related to Dixie, and I believe we haven't touched earlier this week. So basically, as a part of the Dixie deal, as I understand, Magniet took some obligations to establish zero markup for certain socially important goods such as milk, bread, and chicken. And basically, the question is, what kind of impact do you expect from those measures, and like how can you comment on that? And do you think it may change this promo and the pricing dynamic that we see for competitors as well?
Hi, Max. Let me take this question. Let me start from for short description of our pricing policy, which implies low markup for socially important articles. So anyway, we are trying to keep low prices for limited number of, I would say, price entry items in many product categories. So it means that majority of these items are already keeping prices in line with the new pack of responsibilities prescribed by Federal Anti-Monopoly Service. So according to this prescription, we have to keep zero markup for one SKU in each of three categories, which are bread, milk, and poultry. And we estimated, given local assortment, where these categories and these items are quite widely present, that overall, this will cover around slightly above 100 SKUs in our assortment. And majority of these SKUs we see in milk category. Overall, it represents less than 1% in total sales of the company. So all in all, we don't see any significant impact on profitability. So it will be really minor. And even more, given that these entry price SKUs are traffic builders, we expect better customers' traffic and bigger baskets, which will compensate this minor negative effect.
Okay, thanks a lot. That's very clear. My second question is regarding your loyalty card. So basically, as I remember last year, rising loyalty card penetration was putting some pressure on your margin. So the question is whether, have you started to see any benefit in terms of margins, and have you started monetization of your loyalty card? If not, when do you think you can see some benefits in terms of margins from loyalty cards?
Now, the loyalty card, as we currently are using, is providing us with insight that's very helpful for the category management, so that we are improving our offer. So it's less oriented on margin increase. It's more oriented on loyalty and understanding our customer better. We know that people appreciate our loyalty card and therefore are spending more than what they did in the past. The second part of the question was on the monetization. We have not started that yet, but we are about to start. We're actually looking to see how we can organize that. There are ideas of doing that external with an agency or internal in the house, and that's a discussion that we have. But I assume that in the course of this year, end of the year, that we will start monetizing part of the data. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, understood. Thanks a lot.
And we'll go to our next question from Marat Ibrahimov.
Yes, thank you very much for the call. Have a question on your gross margin performance quarter on quarter. If you look at the second quarter figure, it corresponds to the first quarter, almost very close, which is unusual because seasonally in second quarters you have slightly higher gross margin. It looks like you had additional impact on your gross margin, maybe higher share of promos or product mix effect, which negatively affected your gross margin. Can you please comment, and in that respect, how we expect recovery of the gross margin until the end of the year? Thank you.
Hi, Marat. So first of all, we aim to keep, I would say, stable and steadily improving level of gross margin. Given all initiatives that we are running in place, we are very much sure that we can deliver this and secure a stable level of gross margin to avoid all hikes and pikes in development. As for second quarter development comparing to first quarter, we have tried to focus on our approach. And, of course, there were several one-offs in the second quarter comparing to first quarter. One of these effects is a big change in seasonality. Another one is slight change in categories mix with a bit higher share of fresh products in the mix with, as you know, with low margin comparing to dry and non-food categories. Also, we have some change in our emotional loyalty campaigns, which had for sure certain impact on gross margin. And also, out of other components of gross margin, and I think this can be relevant for other players, is change, slight increase in supply chain tariffs driven by tariffs increase for containers related to China, probably containers.
Thank you. Another question on your personnel. According to your monthly data, your staff, number of staff in distribution division has declined by 10% year over year. Can you please comment on that? Is it efficiency improvement or you outsourced some of your logistics and distribution services? Thank you.
Let me take that part. There's intended and non-intended impact here. The intended was indeed that we have increased the outsourcing a bit. We have also seen an improvement of productivity. The non-intended, and that's what you see currently in the labor market, is we are facing a pretty strong pressure locally on the HR ability. So we see that there is a shortage of labor in certain regions, and that leads as well to operational issues in the distribution center and partly in the store. And that's not a Magnit-specific problem. That's, I think, a countrywide problem. And we see that more retailers, we saw it as well in Dixie, but we see it as well with the competition, that more retailers are having issues. And by the way, also suppliers are having issues.
Yeah, that's clear. And the, in convenience stores, the number of personnel also declined despite the growth of the network. This is also for the same reason?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Last question, very short. From which date are you planning to consolidate Dixie operations?
The consolidation will take place as of the day of the deal closure. But the closure of which is the 22nd of July. But the operational consolidation will happen the moment we are actually also ready with the migration to an ERP and goods management system.
Uh-huh.
For now, Dixie will operate as Dixie and will run on its own systems. Of course, we will start aligning procedures. We will start aligning like we mentioned earlier already, the maintenance levels, the operational levels, and also the procurement conditions. But the idea is, as long as we do not have an ERP system integration, that we will keep them separate.
Okay, I remember you told us about that. But I mean, the financial numbers will be consolidated in the second half, which should support your top line.
Right. Financial numbers will be consolidated from the second part of 2021. And in our audited IFRS report for 2021, we are going to issue somewhere in the beginning of March 2022. Dixie will be already included.
And you will provide some separate numbers, as you promised, right? Standalone Dixie and standalone Magnit, right? For some time.
No, as we promised during our conference call on Monday on Dixie, we plan to report our operational results for Dixie separately, while financial results we plan to report as one segment, combined Magnit mm-hmm. and Dixie.
Okay, thank you. That's it from my side.
And if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 at this time. We'll go to our next question from Henrik Herbst with Morgan Stanley.
Yeah, thanks very much. I had sort of 3.5 questions, quite quick ones, hopefully. Firstly, I think you've given some pretty encouraging details on like-for-like trends, and in particular with your existing customers, which in the release you say shop with you more frequently and spend more each time. If you could give a little bit of color on what's driving that, what are they? Is it just that they're buying more expensive things or buying stuff they didn't used to buy with you before? Then secondly, I was wondering as well if you could give us a little bit of color on the COVID impact. I think last year you quite kindly gave us, I don't remember the exact numbers, but how much of the like-for-like growth you thought was coming from COVID. And what are we seeing this year? Is it reversing? So you've got a bit of a headwind in your reported like-for-like, or are you still seeing sort of tailwind? And then the third question was just in terms of integration costs. Maybe this was a question for the call you hosted earlier in the week, but are there going to be any integration costs in EBITDA this year? And then, yeah, sorry, the half question. question, which is my line was pretty bad beginning of the call, but did you say that you expected margins to improve year over year in the second half? I know that was quite a few, but thanks very much.
Okay, let me start. So the like-for-like. The like-for-like is partly coming off, I think, our customers trading up. And that's a result from the category management initiative. So I think we have a more logic range currently on the shelf than we had a year ago. And that's ongoing because we see as well that the Catman cycles are coming in. Where actually the biggest secret is that we're having a quite deep assortment if you would look at the convenience. And it's actually better to have a bit more wide and less deep. And that's the whole exercise that we're doing. That's one element of the like-for-like. The other element, which is not unimportant, is what we see in the migration reports is that we acquire also quite a lot of new customers. And those new customers come from the larger stores and from the non-organized retail. And what those new customers do, they overall are a bit more affluent than our existing customers. So where people from those formats clearly are looking for a way to trade down, they end up with us and actually are also creating a kind of trading up of the customer. And that has a pretty good impact on our like-for-like. And we see that quarter by quarter, still new inflow of new customers, which is actually encouraging. Then the COVID impact. The COVID impact we assess of around 1.5% in the like-for-like. What you should realize is that the COVID also, of course, last year had a pretty strong impact on the margin, because what happened, the malls were closed, and people therefore, for their non-food assortment, primarily came to the food retailers. And we relatively had little non-food, but in our bigger boxes and in our convenience, we have some non-food. So we were starting to sell more non-food, and therefore we saw as well a much bigger margin impact last year, where now you see that the margin year on year is lower, but quarter on quarter it makes actually quite a nice development, because this is much more sustainable, because this is based on a more normalized environment. Then the last one is the integration cost. I think of course we will have to make some costs, but there's also some upside. Because part of the integration cost that we have to make is to optimize structures, to cut down costs over time. And I think my own position is, I think actually the cost that we have to make will be matched with the additional benefits that we get out of this. And there's a couple of things that we have to do quick, so that within the year we also are earning back the costs that that are imposed by the measures that we have to take. Then you were asking the half question on margin improvement. Now, what I do see, and that's also what I told you initially, is I see a sustainable control over the margin that we acquire. And I do believe that with, for instance, the shrinkage, the promo control, the promo margin control, the supply chain improvements, that we have and will show improvement of margin in the second half of the year, leading to a higher margin and end year margin than last year. That's what I'm convinced of. Yeah.
Got it. That's very helpful. Thank you very much.
Thanks. It appears there are no further questions at this time. Mr. Vedekov, I'll turn the call back to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Thanks a lot, Christine.
Thank you very much for listening to our call. And I would like to remind you that we will report 3Q results in end of October. Thank you and have a nice evening.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. Goodbye.
That concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.